Of the nearly 140 million employed Americans, 10.2% work in the nonprofit sector, and another 14.5% in the public sector. That means that more than three quarters, or 105 million Americans, work in business, the world of capitalism. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. Since at least 1891, when Pope Leo XIII issued the encyclical Rerum Novarum, the Catholic Church has debated the relationship between capital and labor. It has been and continues to be a complex and somewhat contentious debate. Not at all deterred by that, Wyoming Catholic College senior Mr. Thomas Sponsler delivered a fine senior oration 2 weeks ago on the topic, quote, "Catholics in a Capitalist World, Understanding Capitalism with Catholic Social Teaching." I began by asking Thomas how he became interested in this topic.
Well, it's interesting because in high school, I took an economics course that was done secularly, so we didn't consider anything within the Catholic Church. And my teacher gave me kind of a preliminary discussion of capitalism, and which I was pretty interested in just because naturally economics interests me. But afterwards, I got into a bunch of discussions with my dad, who's more of a distributist by, I guess you could say, by trade. And I really couldn't define capitalism or give a reason why it's effective in helping people when it's naturally something that's driven by competition. So partly not being able to define it after a whole semester of talking about capitalism, why it's so great, and also partly of this idea of where does the Catholic Church and Catholics' beliefs fit into it, kind of started something in me that I really didn't really get far into answering until I read the papal encyclicals and that. And also having those discussions with my dad kind of showed me how much it's meaningful. Like it really does influence how you're going to see the world, how you're going to see work, a lot of those different things. So I think all three of those really went into why it was interesting for me. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned at the start of your oration that there are certain agreed upon rules for labor and management. Then you said there was something missing from the list. Could you explain that?
St. Benedict XVI, he talks about how within capitalism, especially the government and then the capitalist structure come together with an agreement. The government kind of sets these rules to decide what's going to be legal or not, whether or not you can, you know, the ways you can advertise, the things that you can sell, the services you can provide. And so it provides the legal bounds of what you can do within the society to make money. And then off of that, capitalism kind of determines what, or the structure for what's going to become profitable. And the way that they do that is by having the dominant principle to be competition. And so within the capitalist structure, what becomes profitable and how you're going to view work is all based on that competitive principle that you're going to come into the society and you're going to see the other person as an enemy. And then based on what the popular demand is, you're going to try to meet supply with demand and that kind of like classic graph that everybody knows about. And so given that, then work is considered just as another of those resources, and it kind of creates that dichotomy of the person who comes in with the capital determining what he's going to do, trying to meet consumer demand, and the person with the labor losing his value because he doesn't have the capital. He doesn't have the ability to make those decisions and ends up just being treated as a resource. And so you see it like that because of that competitive principle, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you also said that it can incite vice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How so?
Because of this kind of like agreement between the government and capitalism, you don't have rooms for morals within the system. And so it would be improper, I think, for the government to set up some sort of system like you know, you can't let your job consume your world. It's not even really sensical to talk about that, I don't think. And so within the system itself, there's no place for morals to be put into the laws, and the structure itself doesn't incentivize morals. And so it's left to the consumer and to the worker to do that for himself. And so if you've got, you know, a society where Christianity is dying out or just morality isn't upheld, then you end up just going to what becomes most profitable. And what the easiest way to do that is just to, well, consider your workers as resources, you know, something that you can maximize, you make as much money as possible without considering other moral parts of it. And so it incentivizes the main two that I bring up in my thesis is ruthless competition and then secondly, greed. Because if I give up enough, then I'm going to make more money. If I give up, you know, considering another worker and not undercutting so I can make more money, there's just tons of things that get in your way. And so giving those up because you're only considering greed or you're ruthlessly competitive makes those vices into things that you just practice as a business. It's just the most efficient way to do it.
Now, at the same time, there are good things about capitalism. Mm-hmm. What are some of those?
Well, I think it's kind of the thing that everybody holds on to when they first get asked if capitalism is a good system. And you can see it pretty obviously, especially as an American, where it makes a fantastic work ethic. Because if I do something that consumers love, then I'm going to make a lot of money off of it. So it helps people who start businesses be creative. You want to create something that distinguishes you from other people. You want to be you want to have like a high level of ingenuity, because if I can figure out how to make this product in a more cheap way, it's just great at that, because it allows for it to be competitive. And so you've got a really hard dichotomy where you've got, you know, a lot of businessmen being really creative, really with a high level of ingenuity running their business. And it does a really great job of satisfying material needs. If you consider, I mean, this is the entire battle between capitalism and communism. People look at it and say, well, communist ends up with a society that's malnourished. You just are not effective in putting materials where they need to go. But capitalism does a great job of that, because it's always incentivized me to reuse, you know, materials correctly, because I make money off of it. So I think, yeah, you see that exactly. You see it make people creative, make people, or human ingenuity, and it helps you satisfy material needs because it's good for you.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's lifted billions of people out of poverty across the globe.
It really is. Yeah.
You quote a number of papal encyclicals. Is there some sort of attempt to sort out and balance the strengths and weaknesses of capitalism in those encyclicals? Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because Rerum Novarum, which pretty much sets everything off with Leo XIII, was written all the way in 1891. So just, you know, a really long time ago, if you consider when capitalism starts to come to the economic stage. And so I think he immediately sees that people are considering economics as something that's insulated, something that you don't concern yourself with any other, or you only concern it with like with efficiency. That I consider, you know, my worker as a resource, kind of in that vein of thought. So I think that he's really starting this, and then having all the encyclicals that come after him, like Quadragesima Anno, Liliborum Exertiens, those things are all writing kind of as a commentary to Rerum Novarum and kind of the start of this whole papal tradition. And I think what you see ultimately in Rerum Novarum is this idea that economics can be an autonomous system, that it can decide its own right or wrong doings, that it doesn't need to concern moral or human factors. And so I think that's the majority of what he's trying to do, is he's trying to fight against that, which would be kind of the downfall of capitalism. And so on that side, you see him trying to make economics considered in the moral sphere, considered as something that's contained within it and ordered by it. It's great that we see that, but he also does a lot of praising of capitalism. And you see this also developed more further by John Paul II, St. John Paul II, in Liborum Exertiens and Sententiamus Annus. Because he kind of does the whole play between communism, capitalism. He's the big anti-communism guy. And he shows that, like we just talked about, that capitalism is a fantastic job of meeting material needs, you know, helping people raise out of poverty. So I think you do see this throughout. You see kind of the fight against seeing economics as something that's autonomous and not considering other good parts of what we believe as Catholics. But it also does a lot of praising of, really, I think, of being a system that does a great job in incentivizing people to do the right thing to meet consumer demands, but also of providing for material needs.
Mm-hmm. Now, the church talks a lot about the dignity of the worker. Mm-hmm. What do we mean by that?
Essentially, that you have to consider the value of work, that you have to consider it as more than just a resource. You can see this especially with St. John Paul II and his encyclical Liborum Exertiens, where he gives the twofold distinction of work, where you can understand it as objectively, like we could think of, you know, the career that you pursue. It's as a teacher, as someone that does that in order to make money, to provide for material needs. But at the same time, you can understand work in the subjective sense, which is that it changes you as you do your work. And that's like developing your intellect along with developing your physical faculties as well, kind of fulfilling your human nature. And if we consider it this way, we also see that it allows for a man to become charitable, that hopefully you're not just working in order to, you know, to make money and to do it selfishly, but in some way you think you're benefiting society and you're providing a good for your neighbor to make his life better. So in all these ways, we see that work actually fulfills our human nature, and it fulfills the command that we were given in Genesis of to till the earth, to bring value to it. And so we see it as dignified because it fulfills our human natures and our human nature, and it needs to have that ability. So we need to have like the right working environment, all these different things. And so that dignity is something that fulfills us and allows us to be like, to be fully human, as well as it's the thing that provides value into the world. It's not like, I think as Americans, we have a hard time seeing this, that we think that capital holds the value, but really like a chunk of gold is not worth anything until me as an artisan comes in and puts my value into it. So I think that's kind of the twofold distinction of why.
Or working as an investor.
Exactly, yeah. That idea too. Yeah, and so you see this twofold distinction of why work is dignified.
Yeah. What would the world look like if we heeded the papal teachings about labor and capital and management?
Well, I think on a very real level, there would be things that would change. Maybe not for, well, you might not see it as the best. Probably things would get a little bit more expensive. You'd see things where, you know, I'm not able to buy this jacket that was made in a sweatshop in Asia for, you know, $150. I might have to pay $175, or it's really hard to know how much maybe that would go up. But I think you would firstly see maybe an increase, which would be hard for a lot of people to get at. But ultimately, I think you'd see work become more dignified, that there would be a real care for providing an economic environment that helps people have a fulfilling job. I think that'd be the first time, or the first point. And even something as far as factory work, people trying to provide a job that they're proud of, like of considering that I let this worker, you know, earn an honorable living in good working environment. I think you'd also see just on a practical level, just bigger families, a better ability to provide, to give more time to your other callings, as we wouldn't let economics run away with our whole lives. You see a lot of Americans just, they give their entire life to the job. And as someone who's currently myself about to pursue a law degree, I called a lot of the lawyers that my family knows just to consider as a career. And they almost all of them told me that I have to realize that I might have to give away my entire like first 10 years of my life to a job, just because that's what you do. And it's become a working environment where people really are considered as a way to make money. So hopefully you'd see something like that to kind of dissipate with the reintroduction of more family values, you could say, of seeing economics as a part in a small part of a man's life. And on a larger scale, I think you'd see on a larger scale more of a care for individual communities, where right now we have like, you know, huge companies like Amazon just absolutely dominating just because they're the most efficient. You can just buy things the most cheap for them. I think you'd see a lot of the springing up of more local businesses, more local economies that happen just because you realize your responsibility to your neighbor within economics, which I didn't get as much into in my oration as it did in my thesis. If you read Kavanaugh's Being Consumed, he gives the example of going through a road trip from, say, Colorado to Michigan. You might stop in five random towns along the way, and you see the exact same four restaurants in every town. You see McDonald's, Burger King, you see the same Conoco. There's a sort of globalization even on, you know, the different markets that you pass through on a road trip, where nothing is local anymore, but everything's been expanded to kind of a corporate level because it's the most efficient. And so hopefully you'd also see a complete change in that, where local businesses kind of have the forefront in different communities and are able to do so because consumers are willing to support them because they're local.
As I said last week after my interview with Miss Marianne Spies, Senior Oration Week at Wyoming Catholic College is a great source of encouragement. In our seniors, we see our mission coming alive. Quote, grounded in real experience and thoughtful reflection, our graduates love truth, think clearly, and communicate eloquently, engaging with the world as it is, close quote. And those kinds of graduates will make a difference, shining, as St. Paul wrote, like stars in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. The church and the world need graduates like ours. And you, our friends, can be part of forming our students, mind, body, and soul, through your gifts to Wyoming Catholic College. May I ask you to consider making a gift to the college today? Our website is wyomingcatholic.edu, and our giving page allows you to make a one-time or a recurring gift, putting the benefits of capitalism to a very noble use. Thank you in advance for your generosity. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.